Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with the headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Qi Zhi. Coming up in this edition, pro-Palestinian protests by students at some top U.S. universities continue as Colombia's president faces calls to resign over her handling of the issue. Israel is under mounting pressure to give answers for the discovery of mass graves in and around hospitals in Gaza. And severe floods have ravaged parts of Kenya, leaving dozens dead. We start in North America. U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson has called for the president of Columbia University in New York to resign over her handling of the pro-Palestinian student protests on campus. Namaz Shafik has also faced criticism from Republicans in Congress, who say her actions haven't supported her promises to confront anti-Semitism. Colombia has extended talks with students demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. Students at top universities across the U.S. have been calling for their institutions to separate themselves from any companies that are advancing Israel's military efforts in Gaza. Police arrests of protesters have only fueled more demonstrations. Sally Patterson reports.
Another tense day here at Columbia University, where the presence of police is very strong. Usually we'd be able to walk straight through this campus all the way to the other side, but for the past few days it has been locked. Only students and faculty at the university are allowed in the area. There are a great number of police officers here, also campus security as well. The university says that their priority is keeping students here safe. They say that they are not allowing those who aren't actually involved in the university to go onto the campus itself. That was one of the results that came out of negotiations between the college and protesters. And another deal that they came to, for example, was that language that was being used was not allowed to be anti-Semitic. There was no harassment or behavior that made people feel unsafe. That's been quite a major issue here over the past few days. Over the past couple of days, I've been speaking to students at universities in New York City, and here's what they told me.
The work that we're doing is important. We need to keep on doing it because there are people who are dying every single day. People who are suffering like across the world.
OIU has made it very clear that they do not have their students' backs. They are not interested in protecting student safety. And for the last few months, we have seen how they have been punishing, surveilling, clamping down on any pro-Palestinian voices on campus.
We're continuing to see an escalation in these protests at campuses across the U.S., from California to Illinois to Texas. Some students say that their freedom of expression is being curtailed by universities getting the police involved and banning them from their campuses. But the administration says that keeping students safe is their priority.
That was Sally Patterson on pro-Palestinian student protests in the United States. In the Middle East, Israel has been urged to give answers for the discovery of mass graves in and around some hospitals in Gaza. Martin Lowe has more from Tel Aviv.
Very distressing images coming out of Gaza depicting this mass grave with, we believe, up to 300 bodies buried in it, bodies of civilians. The suggestion, there's certainly a claim that many of those bodies were bound, some with their hands tied behind their backs. But as so often in a conflict situation like this, we have two totally contradictory versions of events from the two sides. Hamas officials in Gaza say they uncovered this grave and it was found in the grounds of the Nasser Hospital, where Israeli troops have been assaulting the hospital for the last several weeks. Now, they say, Hamas says, it's clear that the Israeli army is responsible for the killing of civilians and burying them in this mass grave. But the Israeli forces, the Israeli Defense Force, they have categorically denied being responsible for these deaths. They've issued a statement saying that Hamas's claims are completely baseless. What they have done is provide their version of events. They say that while they were carrying out a military operation in that area, they received intelligence that it was possible that some of the bodies of Israeli hostages who'd been killed were buried in the grounds of this hospital. So they went to the spot and they excavated and discovered the bodies, examined them, confirmed that they were not in fact Israelis, and they they say, so they reburied them where they found them. That is their version of events. The UN has described the existence of the grave as horrific. It is calling for an investigation, and it says if it turns out to be true that bodies were found with hands tied behind their backs, that would clearly constitute a war crime.
That was Martin Lowe reporting. The World Food Programme says Gaza could surpass the famine thresholds in 6 weeks. Palestinians are still struggling to receive basic food aid and services. Aid distribution has been hampered by the Israeli airstrikes and drone attacks in different parts of Gaza. Akram al-Sattari has more.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza continues to be extremely dire. It features lack of access to almost everything. You have a growing number of displaced people who are trying to move from Rafah. You have a growing number of people who are contracting some health disease, especially the upper respiratory system. You have 1 million children who are at high risk because of the insufficient amounts of food intake. You have people who are around 1.9 million to 2.2 million who are not accessing drinkable water, and the water they are drinking is not suitable for drinking, and by that they have been developing also some health issues. You have the international organizations voicing their concern over the way things are being run when it comes to the larger population in the Gaza Strip. You have a continued deterioration in the nutritional status of the internal displaced population in the Gaza Strip, and you have very limited supplies that are allowed into the Gaza Strip.
That is Akram al-Sattari. In Europe, German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier has wrapped up his visit to Turkey, where he met his Turkish counterpart and other officials to discuss bilateral ties and regional issues. Mihail Badovit has more.
On Wednesday, German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier concluded his 3-day visit to Turkey in the capital Ankara, where he was welcomed by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan with military honors. Steinmeier's visit to Turkey marked the 100th anniversary of diplomatic ties between the two countries. In their discussions, the leaders focused on the Israel-Hamas conflict, with Erdogan emphasizing the urgency of improving Gaza's humanitarian situation and facilitating a hostage exchange. Erdogan noted Turkey's reduced trade with Israel, while Steinmeier highlighted Germany's view that Hamas's attack on October 7th led to the current hostilities. Erdogan also aims to expand trade with Germany, eyeing an increase from $50 to $60 billion. Steinmeier began his visit in Istanbul, where he met with the mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu. At Istanbul's Sirkeci train station, Steinmeier honored Turkish migrants in Germany, saying they helped to build his country. There are about 3 million people of Turkish descent in Germany. Before arriving in Ankara, Steinmeier also visited a shelter and a German-funded school in Gaziantep, one of the cities impacted by the deadly 2023 earthquake.
After his talks with Erdogan, German President Steinmeier also held talks with Özgür Özel, the leader of the CHP Republican People's Party, which secured significant victories in key cities during local elections on March 31st, marking a setback for President Erdogan and the ruling AK Party.
That was Mihail Badovit on the German president's trip to Turkey. Turning to Africa, dozens of people have been killed and a few others are missing after floods triggered by heavy rain hit Kenya. Some bodies have been retrieved in waterways near Nairobi. The government is urging people to move away from affected areas as the rainy season continues. Wilkester Niabwa has more.
Hours of heavy rain, which began on Tuesday evening, led to heavy flooding in parts of Kenya's capital, Nairobi, as well as other regions. In Athi River, a suburb about an hour's drive east of Nairobi, residents picked up the pieces from the muddy waters. The river Athi, which flows through their settlement, had swelled and burst its banks, and the water forced its way into their houses.
We saved ourselves by climbing onto the rooftop with the children, but all our houses and our belongings were swept away. 15 houses were all swept away.
In several parts of the capital city, Nairobi, hundreds found themselves marooned by the floods. Major roads were cut off by the waters, causing traffic snarl-ups.
We have been here since 3 a.m. and we haven't been able to move our vehicle. All our passengers left, and now we can see the clouds gathering again. We are afraid.
Dozens have lost their lives due to flooding since the rains began in Kenya, according to the Kenya Red Cross and other government agencies. The Nairobi County government estimates that more than 60,000 city residents have been affected by the floods. On Wednesday evening, 10 bodies had been retrieved from the Mathare River, which runs through an informal settlement in Nairobi. Government officials and humanitarian groups moved in to help rescue the affected, find the missing, and assist those hit hard by the floods. They also urged people to move away from areas near rivers and other water bodies.
Hours after the deluge that led to this latest incident of flooding, floodwaters continue to wreak havoc in parts of the country. Government authorities have asked the affected to consider moving to higher ground. However, a number of them say they simply have nowhere else to go.
In recent weeks, the Kenya Meteorological Department has warned the public to brace for heavy rains as the country experiences its annual long rainy season. On Wednesday evening, the dark clouds gathered yet again and the skies opened once more, signaling the possibility of yet another night of floods.
That was Wilkiston Niabwa on the floods in Kenya. Finally, in China, this year's Zhongguancun Forum is underway in Beijing. It is a platform for global science, technology and innovation exchanges. With more on the forum and what participants are watching out for this year's event, Liu Jiaxing reports.
Zhongguancun, known as China's Silicon Valley, is a prestigious gathering of innovators, entrepreneurs and thought leaders around the globe. This year's Zhongguancun Forum has a theme of innovating for a better world. It promises to be a platform of groundbreaking ideas and collaborations. As the opening ceremony gets underway, excitement fills the air. Esteemed guests and speakers, including government officials, industry leaders, and renowned academics, are set to share their visions for the future of technology and entrepreneurship. Beyond the speeches and presentations, the Zhongguancun Forum offers a rich tapestry of networking opportunities, workshops, and panel discussions. Attendees are seizing the chance to connect with peers, share insights, and explore potential synergies.
This is my 26th time. I love China.
We're all working hard on life sciences and deep computing technology and thinking about the challenges of how we are going to solve some of the big shared problems that we have in the world.
We are specialized in the topic of dual education, so we combine that the students work for a company and at the same time enjoy the classical education.
Nearly 120 activities will be held during the five-day forum that runs from Thursday to Monday. The forum will focus on artificial intelligence, life sciences, new materials, carbon peak, carbon neutrality, medical health, clean energy and other fields, and build a trading and sharing platform for more than 3,000 scientific and technological achievements from more than 40 countries and regions.
That was Liu Jiaxing at the Zhongguancun Forum in Beijing. Now recapping today's headlines, pro-Palestinian protests by students at some top U.S. universities continue as Colombia's president faces calls to resign over her handling of the issue. Israel is under mounting pressure to give answers for the discovery of mass graves in and around hospitals in Gaza. And severe floods have ravaged parts of Kenya, leaving dozens dead. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We would welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Qi Zhi. Thank you for listening.